civil priority. Isolation now in effect. To avoid the risk of contamination, please stay indoors and await further instructions.
Well, good morning, Tribe World. It's Ray here with another lockdown interview. I hope you're all doing well. And join me in welcoming the very lovely and talented Laura Wilson, best known and loved by you all as May in the Tribe, and of course, Jet Marigold in Atlantis. Hi, good morning, Laura.
Good morning, Ray.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm not too bad. I mean, we're just saying you're up in Sydney in Australia, and I'm down here, Gold Coast. And how are you getting on with all this this COVID-19 situation, Laura? How's it affecting you?
Well, you know, it's definitely impacted me, of course, like it's impacted everyone. But I'd have to say, I mean, I spend a lot of time at home studying and working and all that kind of thing anyway. So in that respect, it's kind of business as usual for me. But definitely, you know, there are some obvious restrictions on seeing my friends and, you know, working out in the public and all that kind of thing. So there have been some holdups, but I'm just kind of embracing the slower pace, to be honest.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting time out here today or yesterday or whenever it is that New Zealand has gone down to level 3, as they call it. So they're to get out and about. And here in Queensland, I get all confused, Laura. I don't know what I'm allowed to do, what I'm not allowed to do. But.
Well, I'm not sure the Australian government have made it terribly clear anyway. And it kind of is a moving feast anyway, isn't it? It's changing all the time. But
any kind of state and so up in you're in New South Wales, obviously, up in Sydney.
And
they had it bad because of the cruise ships, I think. There was a cruise ship that came in. And
Yeah, there was one that came in and brought a few hundred cases, actually, into Sydney of COVID. That wasn't great, obviously. But I think they've done a pretty good job since then of containing everything. It appears that the curve is flattening in Australia, so that's good.
I think both in New Zealand and Australia have done a very, very good job.
Oh, New Zealand have done a great job. Yeah.
She's quite an amazing prime minister. She's a young lady as well. I mean, and just amazing how well she's done. And so, Laura, what brought you to Australia?
So I moved over to Sydney 4 years ago I've got someone in the background doing some yard work. Sorry about that. You can hear it. I moved here 4 years ago to go back to university, actually, and do a degree in naturopathic medicine, which I'm almost finished. Not entirely sure exactly when it will finish now, given everything that's going on, but yeah, pretty close.
Oh, and what drew you to naturopathy? Had you always been interested in it, or was it something you just discovered?
No. So, I mean, interesting story, I guess, for me, maybe. but I always wanted to be a doctor, right, ever since I can remember. And I got quite sick in my early teens. I had a really bad bout of glandular fever that left me quite sick for a while. And I had a run of medical treatment that probably wasn't the strongest, and it just left me feeling pretty despondent about the whole medical field at the time. And then shortly after that, and it was just before I started on the Tribe, actually, I was introduced to natural medicine, which wasn't really something that I'd been exposed to as a child. And then all of a sudden, everything just clicked into place. And I was like, oh, see, now this makes sense to me. And I actually started doing correspondence courses on set of the Tribe in Atlantis High, in, you know, like introductory courses to natural medicine and, you know, all of that kind of thing. So it was definitely very much on my radar and a passion. And back then I thought that it was just an interest and thought that I'd, you know, proceed with an acting career. And then I got to a point where I decided that that wasn't what I wanted to do either. And that's when I came back to naturopathy in my early 20s. And I was living in the UK at this point, in London, and Brighton. And then I moved to London to start my degree there. And I did that for a year. And then, you know, kind of life circumstances came up. And And so I put my studies on hold at that time, and I must have been about 24 at the time, and then went on to work on private yachts for a few years. So I did that for almost 7 years, and then eventually came back, finished up on the yachts, went, okay, what am I going to do now? And that's when the calling to go back and finish my degree in naturopathic medicine came in very, very loud and very clear. So that's kind of when I, you know, made some changes in life, moved to Sydney, as I said before, and yeah, really got serious about getting this degree done. I love it.
Once you get your degree, will you, you'll practice then, will you? How do you go about? You get clients or
you go yeah.
this or you work on your own? How does that work?
So, I mean, with the qualification, I could go down several routes. But what I'm planning to do, because I have been in student clinic for the last, well, over a year now, I already have a bit of a client base. So I do plan to continue in clinical practice once I qualify, once I graduate. And, you know, I've got other ideas of potentially writing. I'm in the process of finalizing a couple of articles at the moment to be published in some natural medicine journals, which is quite exciting. And, you know, potentially doing educational things in my community and online and, you know, all sorts of stuff. But yeah, primarily, I think, I mean, I just love working with clients. I love working with people. So that will always, always, always be a part of my work life for sure.
And Laura, for some of the listeners that may not be aware of what it's all about, I mean, how does that sit with so-called normal medicine? I mean, it's an alternative medicine. Is it homeopathic or?
So homeopathic medicine is part of naturopathy. It kind of comes under the umbrella. So the way that I like to explain what a naturopath is we're kind of the GP of the natural medicine world. So we do a little bit of everything. So homeopathic medicine is part of it. You know, we look at nutrition and lifestyle, nutritional supplementation, herbal medicine, you know, energetic medicine via flower essences and all that kind of thing. And also a lot of talk therapy as well, because that's such an important part of it. So it truly is holistic medicine. You know, we look at everyone, you know, from, you know, very simply put, mind, body, soul. But it's really looking at the physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, social, environmental, you know, all of those kinds of things as well.
I think it's fascinating. I mean, I'm really, I'm into that myself. My late mother, bless her, was part Romany Gypsy, part Scottish, but
yeah,
she taught me that where a nettle grows, a dock leaf will be close by, and
yes,
you take a dock leaf, will get you to rub it, you know. And you know, for all kinds of things. So it's really fascinating. And
really is, yeah.
I mean, it's been around since time began, really, isn't it? And
it really is. It is the traditional, like the original medicine, you know. It's traditional medicine, which is why I kind of laugh a little bit when people talk about, you know, Western medicine is traditional medicine and, you know, naturopathic medicine or natural medicine being like a new age thing. Like, no, this, it all stems from what we did in the very beginning, which is what, you know, working with what nature provides us.
That's right. And indigenous cultures, I'm actually.
But I
think you're right when you say it's the mind, body, spirit and soul. And so much illness, I think, comes from stresses or
instinct,
doesn't it? And, you know, and the pressures of the modern world. I mean, we've evolved, I think, so fast. Even over the past 100 years where, you know, I mean, that's what I find fascinating, going back to the vineyard, to sit on a tractor and slow down and enjoy nature and sunsets. I mean, it sounds very, very twee and cliche, but it nourishes the soul. And
it really does. Yeah. And it's so simple.
And so I didn't realize, so kind of communicated, like, well, they talk it in psychology, I guess, cognitive therapy, but being able to talk and share and to, it's very, very interesting. And that's fascinating. And so, Laura, you will then go into what, private practice and and have clients and do some writing and keep researching it. And
yeah,
and it's great. So, I mean, and on nutrition, are you vegetarian or do you eat meat or are you vegan? How do you feel about that?
So, in terms of how I eat, I don't limit myself to any one thing. So I eat primarily plant-based for sure. I eat a bit of fish. I don't eat any red meat or dairy, just simply because, well, I mean, they're both kind of inflammatory things for the body anyway, but also my body just isn't a fan of them. And I'd say that I eat chicken like maybe once every 2 or 3 weeks. So, I mean, it's not really kind of any strict way of eating. It's more just intuitive eating. So I just listen to what my body needs. And, you know, because I've been eating pretty well for quite a long time now, you know, like when rather than having those, programs running in my body of, oh, I really want a burger or a pizza or, you know, or that kind of thing, which are what, you know, those little craving monsters tell our brain sometimes. It's more, oh man, I just really craving some greens or a green juice or, you know, some veggies, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I was speaking with, I think it was Tori the other day, and I was there on a box of chocolates, Laura. And and I thought, why is it that what supposedly is bad for you tastes so good?
I know.
Good for you tastes. And because my wife's very much like you. She's in fact, in my family, they're all vegan or vegetarian. And myself, my two grandsons, we're meat eaters. And and I see them eating carrots. And so they're sitting there with their carrots and their, their greens. And I'm there with a box of chocolates and my burgers, you know. And,
yeah.
And I tried the carrots and, you know, but I don't know if it's if you get educated, you educate your palate. I don't know that it's comfort food. Maybe psychologically, you know.
Well, that's actually a big part of it, Ray, is the psychological part of it.
Yeah.
But there is obviously a retraining your taste buds as well. Like there is a period of doing that too. But yeah, stress and comfort eating. To put it simply, is a very real thing.
Yeah, I mean, when you analyze it, and that's what I, I was speaking with Tom in one of the interviews, and Tom has been sober, you know, that he liked.
Yes, yeah, I did know that.
Yeah, and he's done very well, and it didn't sit well with him simply to drink it. He found it just compounded his difficulty in understanding the world he inhabited. But I mean, myself, I love wine. And if I have a bit too much of it, I suppose, you know, there's a lot of young girls or ladies who suffer with some of the themes we explored in the tribe with bulimia. Comfort eating. You think, what is it? I mean, if you eat, it gives you comfort. Why does it give you comfort to eat? Then you feel guilty that you've eaten, you're putting on weight. And so maybe it's because if we're raised that way, it's something in our DNA, maybe, you know, for food, and it's a very intimate thing, food, isn't it? That
There's also the part as well of certain chemicals in food triggering off that kind of pleasure center in our brain, particularly sugar and, you know, some fats and that kind of thing. So there is that, like, from a biochemical standpoint, there's that going on as well. So that's why, you know, when we eat that chocolate, not only does it taste good, but we get that kind of that pleasure from it as well.
I mean, cocoa as well. I mean, as opposed to chocolate, I think you're right when you, I mean, the modern world, you know, where they mix in. But I mean, cocoa, if you have the original chocolate, how they used to make it years or centuries ago is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's absolutely beautiful. And wasn't Coca-Cola a cough medicine, unless I'm going mad? It started as some medicinal thing. I think I might be wrong on that, but
I think a lot of things like that were initially marketed that way, before the truth came out. But also, you know, the field of, I mean, medicine in general, but also, you know, nutrition, food, all sorts of things changes I mean, so rapidly these days. But what we know now is, you know, so much more advanced than what we knew 50, 60, 70 years ago.
Isn't that fascinating?
And I love it.
So you look at diet, you look at psychology, you look at the natural world, our planet, and isn't it amazing? So really, you're more like a Tyson in your real life.
Yes, actually. I'm very much a Tyson in real life.
Amazing. I mean, and you know, this morning, as I mentioned before we started recording, Laura, I'm a bit hoarse. I'm a bit asthmatic-y. And being a man, I think I've got man flu. I think I'm thinking, oh, my God, I hope I don't have COVID-19. And I'm all paranoid and all that stuff. But, I mean, when I get the flu, my old mum used to give me chicken soup when I was sick. And that always seemed to work, you know. And being in post-war Britain that I grew up, you know, where you'd eat bone marrow. I mean, it's to the vegetarians and the vegans, they'd shiver and cringe. And my wife used to just say, oh, my goodness, I can't serve you that up for dinner. But I used to have, like, wine jelly and I don't know, you know, I mean, it's quite interesting. My mother, who, you know, I very rarely went to the doctor. I mean, it's quite me and when you look at things, I was just reading about this potential thing that they're testing for COVID-19 with the origins in, and I can't remember the name of it, but it was very similar to this thalidomide thing, you know, where with inadequate testing with modern medicine, you know, you're aware of the terrible poor deformed children being born. And so it's quite amazing, really. So, and how does it sit with modern medicine? Do they regulate it, Laura, or do they embrace it? Some physicians, I suppose, will.
In terms of naturopathic medicine? So I think that more and more physicians are, you know, opening up to this way, because really it's foundational for health, right? It's what the food that we put into our body are the building blocks for health for us. They contribute to our cell formation and everything. So really, if we're not getting that right in our lifestyle, managing our stress and getting fresh air and exercising and all that kind of thing, if we don't have those foundational things, right, or at least on its way to being in a healthy state, then, you know, nothing else is really going to work for the long term. So I think there are a lot of physicians that are starting to get on board with that and understand that actually nutrition and lifestyle is really, really important. There are definitely a lot that still poo-poo it and say that it's pseudoscience and, you know, all that kind of thing. But, I mean, I think that's the way with everything in the world, really, isn't it? There's always an argument for and against everything. But it is exciting that there's more and more, like, science coming out to support, you know, good nutrition, diet, herbal medicine, nutritional supplementation, all that kind of thing to support health and well-being and the lifestyle side of things.
Our bodies and Mother Nature and our planet. It's an amazing, miraculous thing that we tend to, I guess, take it for granted, don't we? We tend to normalize without thinking. I mean, the miracle. You know, when my poor dad passed away recently.
Oh, I'm sorry.
About him, and thinking when he was a baby, his little bones, and he was young, and how the body changes, and within the body, we almost have our own pharmacy in the stomach, don't we? With bacteria that fight. You know, you've got good bacteria and bad bacteria, and the body is so, as you rightly say, the natural way is that our body with I mean, antibodies and all this kind of stuff, that you can fight disease generally with your own things already in the body. I mean,
100% at all times, what our body wants for us is to be healthy. That's why everything falls back on homeostasis in the body, right? Which is pulling the body back into balance. And this is the constant kind of to and fro that's going on inside our body. But in order to do that, and there's this beautiful, kind of principle in naturopathic medicine that is called the vis medicatrix naturae, which is the healing power of nature. But also it kind of speaks to this innate ability of for all of us to heal ourselves. But we've really got to be giving it the tools to be able to do it, right? So that's where, you know, what we put in our mouth to eat comes in, what we're drinking, you know, what we're thinking and moving our bodies and all that kind of thing comes into it. So, yeah, we've kind of hold our own hand and help ourselves out.
Well, that's fantastic. So it's absolutely fascinating and just amazing. And so good bacteria comes from a certain kind of food, and bad bacteria, I guess, comes from the, you know, processed and unnatural, not from the natural world, really. And it's a horrendous amount of salts and gunk that they put in food. And
yeah,
KFCs, nothing wrong with KFCs. I'll get sued if I criticize them. But
We're not criticizing anyone here.
I mean, it's
talking about strong choices.
Yeah, I was saying to my grandsons the other day that, you know, growing up in post-war Britain, you know, where I long and I wondered, I was feeling a need to have some peas, you know, I love peas. And I used to get them in a pod, you know, rather than in a can. And it's so different and organic produce and all of this stuff. So it's something that we've evolved, I think, so fast with technology and yet maybe medicines and a lot of the, I mean, some of the physicians, I can't understand why they poo-poo it because, I mean, they prescribe placebos. That's in itself the mind. I mean, it's just quite, it's that interlinking thing, as you say, Laura, of your mind, body, spirit, soul. And if it's not interconnected, that's where illness and stresses comes from, I think, that it's amazing. Isn't it amazing?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
it's fascinating. I love it.
So, Laura, just coming back, I mean, you, after the tribe, you how did you get involved on the yachts then, and sailing? How did that come about?
Yeah, so I mean, after the tribe in Atlantis High, I kind of ended up. I spent a few more years acting, maybe like another couple of years acting after that, and then I moved to the UK. I fell in love, moved to the UK to be with my love, and from there, that's when I started to kind of change my thoughts about what I wanted to do with my life. It's when I started to look at studying naturopathy back then in the UK, and it was when after I did my first year of naturopathy in London. A whole bunch of stuff came up that I couldn't keep on going with my studies at that point. And so I thought, I'll go and spend the summer, the European summer, in the south of France working on yachts. You know, I had a few friends doing it. They were having a blast. So I thought, yeah, great. I mean, who doesn't want to be in the south of France for summer, right? Yeah. This will be a great experience. I'll go and do it. And then that 6 months turned into 6.5, almost 7 years. Wow. And I traveled all over the world, visited some beautiful, incredible places, really saw all different kind of aspects of life and the ratio of, you know, staying in some islands that were in extreme poverty to seeing the most lavish, you know, of lifestyles. So it was a real eye-opener for me just in terms of life and people and people's experiences of life and, you know, all that kind of thing. Whilst also meeting a bunch of amazing people and, just traveling the world. It was such an incredible experience, which is probably why that 6 months turned into 6.5 years.
But again, it's a wonderful experience, Laura. So you probably sailed the seven seas, except for the Arctic, I guess. But
true.
And isn't that, and no seasickness?
Generally, no. I mean, I think when I first got on there, when we were underway at sea, I might feel a little bit nauseous, but it would have to, by the end of it, it would have to be really, really bad weather for me to feel sick. Generally, it would make me feel a little bit tired, if anything. But no, I was very, very fortunate that I was not one of the ones with aggressive seasickness.
I love sailing, I have to say, I've been very lucky where, you know, I've traveled around the world as well, but generally it's on a big cruise ship, Laura, with a general.
Yeah. You
know? So, and we were in a hurricane once in the Atlantic, and it was unbelievable.
Oh, wow. There.
And this was actually on the Queen Elizabeth, a huge ship. And you realize the power of Mother Nature.
She's a force.
Oh, horrendous. And so did you ever have any frightening kind of storms that did you ever have in a hurricane? Or?
Yes. I was never in a hurricane, but I certainly experienced some pretty severe weather. It was more so earlier on in my career in yachting. We kind of, some really, really bad weather hit kind of out of nowhere, really. And it was honestly like being in a washing machine for about 12 hours. And I mean, there were, not to sound dramatic, Ray, but there were definitely times when I thought, this isn't my first kind of few months of living on a yacht, right? And I thought, man, I don't know if we're going to make it through this. Yeah. It was pretty intense, you know, like half the yacht ended up, the interior breaking because the boat was rolling around so much. So it was pretty scary.
Were they like sailing ships, sailing yachts or?
So I worked on motor yachts. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. I spent some time on some sailing yachts, but no, the ones that I was working on were the motor yachts.
And what size would they be? I mean, how long would they be there?
I mean, so generally the ones that I worked on a couple of different ones, but they were about 60 meters, so roughly 200 feet.
Yes. Wow. Wow, that's incredible. And do you have a favorite place that you sailed to, Laura? Do you have a favorite port?
Look, I have a few different ones for different reasons, but I spent a year in Tahiti and I just love Tahiti.
Yeah.
So, and just all of French Polynesia, actually, you know, Tahiti, Mo'orea, Bora Bora, you know, all of that kind of thing. I just absolutely fell in love with the place. Like the place, that the islands themselves, it's absolutely stunning, but also just the people there, so beautiful. Like they've just got such beautiful, kind hearts and it's so welcoming. It was a really special time.
Yeah, the one, my memory, I've been blessed to have traveled or sailed around all the Pacific Islands as well now, Laura.
Yeah.
My memory of Tahiti, it's beautiful, but man, it's expensive. The ice creams are unbelievable.
Oh, yeah, it's very expensive. Isn't it? You're right.
Again, that's for me, but I love it. And I actually love Vanuatu. And the reason I love Vanuatu, it's so, you know, we went there and it's almost, third world primitive in some ways, but some of the children, the happiness, they didn't even know about some of the games that my grandchildren would play. You know, they'd just be let loose and climb trees. But they had, as you say, the beautiful spirit and shiny teeth and eyes and vibrancy and a happiness. And they were living at one with Mother Nature. They weren't really just amazing. And the music and the dance I love it too. I think it's absolutely beautiful.
I agree.
Absolutely.
It's just such simple lives, is it? Right? And they're so happy.
Yeah. And you know, you look at them and that's precisely what you see is, and everybody, you know, we're always, aren't we? We're always pursuing happiness amazing that I was reflecting the other day, you know, on some of the cats who are having newborn children and they're saying, oh, you know, when the babies are born, they don't do much but sleep and eat. And people say, until they're, once they start walking, they become more, and then it's a terrible two. And they say, well, once they go to school, then they'll meet other kids, they'll be amazing. But then they go to school and they're kind of temper tantrums. And then they become, then they're teenagers. And Then when they're 20, you know, then you look back and you think, wasn't it nice when they were little babies, you know?
Yeah.
What kind of retrospective,
you know,
kind of you change and so when you went after your love, did your love stay with you, Laura, or did your love break your heart?
So, no, there was no heartbreak, actually, but we did go our separate ways. And it was actually a beautifully amicable separation. We just both kind of got to a point in our lives where for a long time we were on the same path. And then kind of without us even really realizing it, they just, our paths split off. And then when we did realize that, we sat down and had a discussion and, you know, with a lot of love, decided to explore those, our paths. Yeah. No regrets on either one of our behalves. And, you know, we're still really good friends. I adore him. We just both knew deep down that that was what we needed to do, which was hard because we were both still very much in love with each other. But we had to honour our own individual bigger callings.
Yeah, no, that's important. I think that's very wise. And one thing, do any listeners, sorry about the bird noise.
Oh, no, it's fine. I love it.
Yeah, there's nothing. I mean, you know, I normally, as I think I mentioned on one of the podcasts, when we're filming and we go in the post-production suite and we're putting on Atmos tracks and, you know, kind of, and I'm able to turn down the birds or turn the birds up or the light.
Yeah, of course.
And I keep looking for the switch to think, my God, I'll turn these birds down. They're a bit too loud. But, you know, we're talking about the natural world and
then. Well, exactly. Yeah.
Looking out, I'm just looking at the most beautiful lorikeet, all these colors and I'm wondering, it's like a painting. You think, my goodness, how beautiful is that little bird? And absolutely gorgeous. It's a green, yeah. Oranges and amazing colors.
Beautiful. I've actually got a few rainbow lorikeets outside my window at the moment as well. My office looks onto a bunch of trees, and usually it's me with the birds in the background, so they're being a bit quieter today. They're beautiful, aren't they?
They're absolutely beautiful. And we had to put back one of our things with you because you had a cat or have a cat still. Is the cat okay? It went to the vet.
Yes, yeah. He is okay. His name's Benny. So he is a rescue. So I just adopted him just over a month ago now, and he actually arrived with some digestive issues, bless him. So I've been working with the vet to try and improve those, and it's been a slow and steady process. So, and it's been going up and down, but he seems pretty good at the moment. He seems pretty happy.
Oh, that's lovely. So are you a cat person or a dog person, or do you like cats?
I'm just an animal person, Ray. I'm all about equal opportunities for the animals. Oh, it's just with my personal lifestyle, a cat made more sense.
Yes.
But I mean, eventually when I've got, you know, some more land for, you know, a dog to be able to run around in, I'd love to do, you know, adopt a dog as well, and probably eventually have some kind of zoo at my house because I just love animals. But one step at a time.
Yeah, that's another dimension as well, the animal world. And you know I think that it's again, all my family, we're all animal lovers, and through, you know, my wife and I, through our charity, we support a lot of, you know, the zoo. We used to sponsor the kind of red pandas and all kinds of different things.
Yeah, beautiful.
Breeding programs and it's like swimming with the dolphins, you know. I mean, if I miss having a dog by my side, or, you know, you need that really. Again, that's another dimension for that they, and they call it, again, it's very, very interesting where, I mean, what do they call it? It's like some in America, particularly, where you're allowed your
therapy animals. Yeah.
I mean, some of them have like the most amazing. Some of them have like peacocks and little horses and they can fly on airplanes, and it's quite amazing that. I can see that. Like, and again, my mother, bless her. I mean, it's interesting, Laura, that, and that's why I love Native American cultures or indigenous cultures, because my mother taught us to choose an animal and observe that animal and watch that animal and learn from that animal. And all of my family have done that. And I mean, I can reveal that my animal is a gorilla. And
yeah, I was just going to ask you, actually. Yeah.
Gorilla. And I often, I mean, it's interesting. All my life, I look at everybody and I think, oh, I wonder what kind of animal, what would be their spirit animal? But with that gorilla, and if you, you can, you know, you kind of, you can go to them and learn a lot and observe them and become in tune with them. And it's, yeah, so it's, you know, I can well understand, you know, as you say, where you love animals and you need Benny there, and that will give you, I mean, it's just nice, isn't it, to have an animal in your life.
And, yeah, absolutely.
And how close, and sadly, I mean, we had a couple of, you'll remember Bob the dog.
Yes.
And Bob, who retired to my vineyard, and poor Bob, when he died, I swore I'd never get another dog. It just hurt too much.
And yeah.
Bob was her best friend. He was a wonderful, he was that kind of, you know, he could calm me down, lower my blood pressure more than, you know, kind of a glass of Pinot or, but I, and now, then I went out shopping with my son, my special needs son.
Yeah, Cameron.
Yeah, Cameron.
Yeah.
And he wanted me to take him to the NSPC, the dog pound, just to, and I said, look, there's no way in the world we're going to get any animals. And I thought he was after a little kitten, you know. And
yeah.
So we went there, and there was these two little dogs. And I thought, oh, no. And the man, and one of the dogs came up and started to lick his face. And then the man was, and I was asking about the dogs. And I thought, oh, God. So I said, okay, we'll take that one. And he said, well, what about this one? It's his brother. And I thought they looked like Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito. And
oh, twins, yeah. Thought,
no way they can be brothers, you know. But so I went out for a loaf of bread and came back with two dogs, you know. And
yes.
And my family loved it. And so, but sadly, the I mean, that was about 10 years ago. And sadly, one passed away just a couple of months ago. And again, it just, it, you get so close. But it's better to love, as Shakespeare would say, and lose than not to love at all.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Yeah, but they're family.
That's family, precisely. And yeah. And we need that. And I mean, I'm sitting here today and I'm missing, you know, when we're in lockdown, I miss the animals, you know. I miss, you know, I mean, the one thing I don't miss is I'm paranoid about snakes. How are you with snakes, Laura, and spiders?
Look, I'll be honest, I'm not very good with snakes and spiders. Spiders particularly, though, especially living in Australia, right? Like, I mean, not only do they look terrifying, but they're genuinely terrifyingly deadly. Yeah. But thankfully, I don't see a lot of snakes around where I live. And the only spiders I've really seen are either just the really, really small kind of, you know, money spider type ones, or the huntsmen that look terrifying, but they're actually not. They're one of the non-deadly, pretty chill ones. Yeah.
I'm the same. I mean, you and me both. I mean, if there's a spider, I'm on the table, you know, like screaming.
Yes. And I do know, I'm the same.
Oh, it's horrendous. And again, that's very, very interesting how you can, you know, how you're, I mean, the fight or flight syndrome in health, the parasympathetic nervous system, where it kicks in, and imagination is the most amazing thing. So you think, how can this spider, this tiny little thing, freak out somebody of our height? Or, you know, you'd think it should be the other way around.
I know.
Yeah, but it's all amazing. Now, Laura, I'm got some questions if you don't mind from some of our fans, and I'll just we've got a lot of them from Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and but a lot of emails. So this one from Mark James. Good morning, Mark. May was such a beautiful underdog. She didn't get her man or woman she deserved. I relate to her, always the outcast, and had her own style. That's an interesting, I mean, not so much a question, but yeah. So you, your character May was very individual, and
she was, fiercely independent, and yet
very resilient, I have to say. And
I agree, yeah.
And but nice, vulnerable qualities, and which actually segues into an interesting one from Samuel Owusu. Good morning, Samuel. Are there any qualities or traits that May possessed that you have also? I want to also add that I loved your portrayal of May. There was something about the fire in May that made viewers gravitate towards her. And that's true, actually, Laura. You know, that throughout the, your innate talents and abilities as an actress, and but your spirit, I think, May was a very interesting character. And so
She was quite complex, I think. Yeah. But yes, definitely very fiery, but I loved that vulnerability about her as well. Yeah. So in terms of similarities, I would say probably that resilience is a big piece that I resonate with for my own various, life challenges that I've faced. I would say that kind of just pulling your socks up a bit and, not ignoring what's going on, obviously, like definitely learning a lot through life with what life presents to you and its challenges, but also having that inner strength to move through it. Yeah.
No, that's good. That's a good summation of it, Laura. I agree with you. I mean, now I've got one from Alicia Perez. Good morning, Alicia. If you could have played any other character besides May, who would it be and why?
I always said that I would have loved to have played Ruby, actually, because the sassiness of Ruby, the saloon owner, played by Fleur, who's one of my closest friends. I just loved that character and the sassiness of her, and just the fact that, she wouldn't take any crap from anyone. You know, she was a strong, independent woman, and I just loved that character, yeah.
That's interesting. So Fleur, is she in America?
She is, she lives in LA. Yeah, she's lived there for a number of years now. Mm-hmm.
And did you spend much time there, Laura, in LA or?
Yeah, so I actually lived there for on and off for a couple of years with Fleur.
Wow.
So it was probably like a year full time, and the year before that I was still on the yachts, but I would probably spend half the month in LA and half the month on the yacht as I was kind of transitioning off. But I absolutely love California. I think California is one of my soul homes.
Oh. Mm. And Laura, with the acting have you retired? Would you ever come back to acting?
Oh, look, I get asked this question a lot, and particularly when I moved back to New Zealand. I mean, it must have been after LA, it must have been 5 or 6 years ago before I moved over here. And, reconnecting with, Antonia and Tori and lots of the old, Tribe and Atlantis High friends of mine. And a lot of them were saying, you should get back into it. And I kind of thought, maybe I'll dip a toe in, and started auditioning just for ads and stuff. And it just didn't quite feel right again. And then when I, decided to go back to university and do this degree, I was like, no, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. So, I mean, I would never rule anything out in life, but I'm so passionate about what I'm doing now that I just don't know how I could do both. However, like I said, I won't rule anything out. But what I have managed to utilize from my old life of acting into what I do now is with presentations. So I guess having that that comfort on a screen or a stage has allowed me to kind of have that comfort in presenting to others and delivering the good word, I guess you could say, of naturopathic medicine to others.
Well, that's interesting. And Laura, did you originally did you have an interest in the arts as a child, as a little girl growing up?
Yeah, I did. I always loved drama at school. I didn't feel like I was particularly good at it. I definitely enjoyed it. And, you know, would always do the school plays and all that kind of thing, take drama classes at school. But in terms of professionally acting, I kind of fell into it, really. Yeah. So it wasn't something that I expected to do, but I certainly enjoyed it while I was doing it.
Yeah, because Laura, you came into my life on, we did a project called Choice, you'll remember. And were you at school?
Yes. Yeah, I was.
Yeah, so probably, I mean, and for the listeners, and we'll, I mean, at some point, I'm very proud of it, actually. It was a very important, I mean, it was a thing aimed at young people to where you have a choice for, and that's all kinds of thing. I mean, with sexual awakenings, with, you know, safe sex and with suicide and all kinds of drinking, drugs, everything. And it was a very important project that we did. And you...
Yeah, really important.
And you were terrific. And then Danny James was in it.
Yes, and, yeah.
Yeah, and that's where your gifts and talents first came to my notice, Laura. And so you were still at school probably, you know, and then... You know, where the tribe then came, and did you do your schooling? Were you in a tribe school, or you didn't do the schooling then? When you
I was doing the schooling. I transferred onto correspondence school to finish my schooling while we were doing the tribe. But I mean, I was already, by the time I came onto the tribe, I was kind of at the going into my final year of high school anyway. So. Yeah, it wasn't too much of an impact on my school life, to be honest. But yeah, it was falling into doing that that short film Choice with you, with Cloud Nine. And then from there, you invited me to audition for the tribe. And the only reason why I auditioned for Choice in the first place was a very, very close friend of mine, Nick Spilacy. You'd cast him in one of the other roles, the boy who was battling with depression and, you know, had the suicide storyline.
Yeah.
And so he suggested that I go and audition, and so I did and ended up getting cast. And then, yeah, from there, being invited to audition for The Tribe, which I think I had originally auditioned for another character. What was the name? Danny. Was that it?
That's right. Yeah. Danny, see that you were going to be Danny.
Yeah.
But we saw I saw in you some other elements that I mean, had I known about the, I would have, you could have been an interesting Thai San.
Yes.
Yeah, it was interesting that. So Laura, I've just got some other ones. Bear with me.
Yeah. One
from Emil Martin. Good morning, Emil. May was seen as someone who always looked after herself in times of stress, such as when she joined The Chosen. Do you think you would have done the same in that situation? Thought you were great in both The Tribe and Atlantis High. Also, which outfits of May's was your favourite? Did you have a favourite outfit of May's, Laura?
Well, first of all, thank you for the compliments. So to be honest, my favourite costume of May's was probably the very first one. So it was because it was pretty badass. And I know that Nikki, who was the costume designer back then on the tribe, her kind of vision for May's costume was Xena-esque, which, you know, I was obviously pretty happy with. So it was the kind of brown tan leather top and kind of three-quarter pant type things, and these awesome hand-painted boots and leather jacket, and I just thought it was pretty cool. So that was probably my favorite costume. What was the other half of the question, sorry?
The other one was about in Atlantis High, that it's interesting with Atlantis High, Laura, that where the tribe is this cult show, Atlantis High is a cult within a cult, you know.
Yes. I loved shooting that show so much, by the way.
It was just so out there, and it's suddenly getting an audience, and people are just fanatical about it and just loving it. And
really?
Yeah. And it's
it was ahead of its time.
It was just weird, wasn't it? I mean, it's like
it was so weird, which is what I loved the most about it.
And you were terrific in it, playing Jet Marigold and
Thank you.
So I mean, did you find that difficult Laura, to do that transition, or did you? I mean, Jet Marigold, the character, was just so crazy. Eh? Did you had a lot of fun with it and enjoyed it?
I had so much fun with that character. I mean, there were a lot of similarities between her and May, I think, in that kind of sassiness. But just her quirkiness, I just absolutely loved. Yeah.
Just to be who she was. I mean, that was an interesting, she was very opinionated and all the conspiracy theories. And
I know. She'd be doing really well in 2020, actually, Jet Marigold, with all the conspiracy theories floating about. But no, she was very unapologetic about who she was. She was very much, this is who I am, and, you know, either like it or lump it, which I actually really respect.
Yes.
You know, I think that's a really admirable quality.
Yeah, I've been developing in my writing, Laura, a story which thematically is about trying to be who you are, you know? And
yes.
And because if you live your life trying to be what others expect you to be, you'll never be free. And it's interesting where you must, and in mental health, I think so many people, I mean, you know, as teenagers, we all go through peer pressure and or with parents saying, look, you should go and get a career or do this or do that.
Yeah.
And you end up being not, you be what you perceive others to be, even where you love, you know, you try and be what your love wants you to be, where fundamentally you can never be happy unless you're happy within.
Exactly. Yeah, I was going to say as well, and even just, I know you spoke about in teenagers with peer pressure. I think even as adults, people of all ages, especially with social media and things like that, you know, social media kind of, and just media in general, trying to tell us who we should be and what we should buy and what we should look like and all that kind of thing.
Yes.
It's really hard, you know.
Very, very hard. And again, in fact, some of the other podcasts we've talked about technology, we observed it in the tribe and technos and paradise and that. But it's very instant now in communication where it's, and you can then perceive on Facebook that maybe, or Twitter, or whatever it is, whatever form. I mean, I'm a bit of a dinosaur, but I do sense that some, you know, people would think, hold on, I'm not having as good a life as somebody on Facebook. What's wrong with me? Why are they so happy? And I'm not.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Where people more often than not just present the best version of their lives to everyone on social media, right? What you're not seeing are the times when people are really down or having a bad day or received some news or had a, you know, something happened to a loved one or, you know, all that kind of thing. We don't see that as much. It's like we're all trying to say, hey, look at me, my life is great, but we're not seeing what's actually going on underneath that.
And it's a paradox, really, because the news is all bad news. You're very rarely good
yes.
news. And yet social media is all good news. It's very rarely bad news. And yet good news, it's almost sanitized and it tends to be, as you say, it seems to be perfect, where, you know, I think the only result of that is, as pleased as people would be to see people happy, but they're so happy, they got everything, what's wrong with me, you know? And I think that's dangerous, I really do.
Yeah, I agree. So I think that's a really important message of your writing, Ray, is to encourage people just to, I mean, truly find who they are and really fall in love with that person and support that person and express that person authentically to the world.
I think that's right. And it's an interesting thing, really, because, you know, I think anxiety is such a dangerous.
So prevalent, too.
Yeah. And it's a good thing. I mean, it started as a good thing for the fight or flight. It keeps us safe.
Mm.
Imagination feeding that anxiety, you know, can bring a lot of stress and heartache. And are you an anxious person, Laura?
I've definitely had my own relationship with anxiety for sure. And if I'm not looking after myself, that plays out as anxiety and low mood and, you know, all of that kind of thing as well. But I've definitely learned a bunch of tools over the years to help manage my anxiety and any feelings of anxiousness that come up. So yeah, it's definitely, you know, meditation, mindfulness practice, even just deep breaths as well. If I'm out and about and I start to, you know, feel a little bit overwhelmed by what's going on, just really big, deep, slow breaths. Connecting with nature is such a big one for me personally. Yeah, just to ground my energy.
And do you walk? Do you like to get out and go for walks and this kind of thing? And
oh, I do. When I have time, when I'm able to, I'm out going for a walk outside every day, which has been one of the great things about what's been going on at the moment is that I have had more time to do that. And, you know, obviously still observing the social distancing and so on that, you know, we're all kind of needing to be aware of at the moment. But I'm really fortunate. I live on a beach in Sydney, on Bondi Beach. And there's a really beautiful coastal walk that goes from Bondi, well, all over the eastern coast of Sydney here, through the eastern suburbs. But that way I'm able to go out for a walk, you know, in the fresh air, nature, get some sunshine, but also be able to look at the ocean as well. So I'm very, very lucky, very blessed to be able to do that.
It's interesting with the, you know, we were speaking earlier that with children or babies that, you know, I subscribe that, you know, when my kids were young and they didn't, when they were crying, I'd put them near like a dish, like a washing machine. And they seemed to calm them down.
Yeah.
I thought I was mad, you know, and I said, because they can hear similar things to when the mother was carrying them, you know.
That white noise, yeah.
And that noise on the beach is very similar, you know, it's very rhythmic and very, very slow. And who was, I was speaking with Matt Robinson the other day.
Ah, yes.
Matt, you know, saying that I used to watch his rhythms, how he walked. He walked like in 4/4 time. You know, everything is a rhythm, and the trees and the wind and everything is rhythmic. And you know, like cars and driving at, you know, 80 miles an hour, walking fast around the town and late for an appointment. It all. Everything gets out of sync, doesn't it, really? And that, yeah. I think it's good for you and good for all of us if we can take that time. So Laura, with this COVID-19, you know, we have a lot of letters from people that were reassured by the tribe watching it as a series and all the storylines, and it kind of gave them reassurance or some tips, or they could relate, or they learned something from it. I mean, is there anything that you could say to anybody that's maybe, because a lot of people are frightened, a lot of people are anxious. Any thoughts on that, how they could keep them calm? I mean, like just meditation, I guess, or not like any, did you live one day at a time, so to speak?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the biggest lessons that's being presented to most of us at the moment is just surrendering control. I mean, I think one thing that most of us have in common at the moment in these uncertain times is that we don't really have control over much at the moment, except for our own little kind of microcosm around ourselves, right? So I think that being able to take some time to just have acceptance over the fact that there are many things out of our control at the moment, which, you know, for me as a recovering control freak, has certainly, you know, been a challenge at times. But having that acceptance has really, really helped my mental health. going through this process. And yeah, everything that I spoke about before, so making some time to connect with yourself, whether that's through meditation, a guided meditation. You know, there are so many free meditation apps that you can get now, like Mind Space and, you know, things like that. Or just get a free one off YouTube. You can, you know, search a certain theme that you would prefer. I mean, there's so many free resources that you can get. Even just connecting with your breath. So really long, deep breaths in and out is a really good way to, you know, kind of calm your nervous system as well. It's actually one of the fastest ways to engage your parasympathetic nervous system, which is your rest and digest arm of your nervous system, which is the opposite of the sympathetic nervous system, which is what you keep referring to, Ray, is that fight or flight, which is when our heart rate gets going and we start to experience anxiety and our blood's rushing around and we don't feel quite right, which, as you said, in an emergency is very important. But, you know, a lot of the time we're triggering that response unnecessarily because our brain doesn't know the difference between what's real and what isn't. So if we're thinking about something that is making us feel stressed and anxious, you know, like thinking about things that could happen and triggering that response, our brain doesn't know that it's not actually happening.
Which is
why having, you know, mindfulness and awareness around the thoughts that we're having and just reining them in a little bit, you know, it's really easy to catastrophize our thoughts, particularly at the moment. And meditation is a really good tool to bring it back down to base camp, I guess, within ourselves and go, no, okay, deep breaths, I am safe, you know. That kind of thing. So, and just in connecting with nature, I think is a really important one as well.
That's great advice. And I totally agree with it. And again, I'm fascinated with everything you're, in fact, I sometimes think, oh my God, I'm going to quit. I'm going to study what Laura's studying.
Ah, you should.
It's never too late. I love it. I really do. And it's, and no, I'm fascinated with the, you know, I you know, I often say, Laura, you know, if I knew I would live this long, I would have taken better care of myself, which is very interesting because, you know, I've done everything that I shouldn't do, you know, but, you know, my imagination is, you know, like today, I think I've got COVID-19. It's the man flu. It's awful, you know, and I don't, you know, but, you know, when I fly, I hate flying, you know, but I have to fly. I live my life on an airplane, but In the early days, and the stewardess would come up and say, are you okay? Because they, when I first started to fly, they'd say, are you frightened of flying? And I said, no, I'm frightened of crashing, you know. And
yes. I don't mind. I used to have crippling fear of that when flying in my early 20s. It was, and I traveled a lot as well, but eventually, yeah, managed to work my way through that one. But it's
that same thing, isn't it? Where, you know, you'd sit there, as you say, the blood pressure goes up, the pulse rate, you start sweating, you get frightened.
Yes.
The imagination and being on the sea, if you're in a storm, you start thinking that we're going to capsize or be on the Titanic or...
Exactly.
The parasympathetic nervous system, that's very, very interesting. And as Laura rightly said, it's probably good not to feed the imagination by... might be, and to just accept, as you, I think your word acceptance is just accept what is and what's in your control. You can't change what isn't in your control. Do you subscribe to like some teas, like green tea or?
I think that herbal teas are incredible, and I think that all of us should drink more. I've actually got a green tea in my hand at the moment. You can drink too much green tea, but that's another story. So I try and limit it to just a couple of cups a day for green tea. But there are so many beautiful herbal teas out there, especially going back to what we were talking about with about anxiety, chamomile tea. So most people have probably heard of chamomile to help us get to sleep. But even just if we're feeling like we're spiraling a little bit and starting to feel that anxiety creep up, chamomile is an amazing one to nourish our nervous systems and help us feel calm.
So it's like a sedative type effect, isn't it?
Just... Yeah, it's a mild sedative, yeah.
That's great. And Laura, do you have clients now or?
Well, not right this minute under COVID restrictions. Unfortunately, our student clinic on campus has shut down. So it's been closed for just going on 6 weeks now. And we won't be reopening again until the beginning of July. Where hopefully, our community will be in a stronger position with COVID, which I think we will be. I mean, we're doing pretty well. So, I have been seeing clients for the last year and have got a pretty strong client base at the moment, which is awesome. It's actually been a really hard thing for me. Again, one of those things that are completely out of my control that I've had to accept. But the fact that I'm not able to support my clients through this time at the moment has certainly been challenging for me.
I bet that it's when it's all we'll at any given time, if you know, I think a lot of the tribal fans out there would be fascinated to either, I don't know if you do it online or whatever. I mean, I certainly would like some tips on what to eat or not. So.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'll let you know once I've qualified and can start doing online consultations. But in the meantime, though, Ray, I do. I've got an Instagram page that I use to share, and I'm not trying to shamelessly plug myself here. But for anyone, for yourself or anyone else out there who would like to learn a little bit more about this stuff and get some naturopathic tips on how they can support their health and well-being. I do have an Instagram page that people can follow.
And how would they find it? Again, I'm not familiar with that. What would be the call sign for that? It's Laura.
So my handle for Instagram is LauraWilson_naturopath.
Fantastic. Well, you should check it out, tribal brothers and sisters. If you want to know more, check out Laura's Instagram page. And
yeah, please connect.
So for any of you out there in tribal world, do check out Laura's Instagram page, and I know you'll find it as fascinating as I have, and to find out more of this amazing alternative medicine, which is really quite fascinating. And you know, Laura, our hour has passed so fast.
I know. I feel like I could speak with you all afternoon.
Well, likewise, actually. It's absolutely fascinating. And so another time, but at some point, if we do any more tribe, even if I could steal you for 6 weeks or 8 weeks, or I'm sure I could convince you to come out of retirement, even if you went back to your naturopathy, because you're too talented to do your acting. And who knows, you just never know what will evolve, but it's always...
Yeah, well, like I said, I would never rule anything out.
So. Well, you can't never leave, that's for sure. And I think it's tremendous for you to have this in your life, and you're clearly passionate about it, and that's lovely. That gives a sense of purpose. And that's the nicest thing. You can help a lot of people that really do need help, and so well done to you. I think that's terrific, and...
Thank you. Yeah, I am very, very passionate about helping others. I really, truly feel like it's my calling. So, yeah, I'm very happy.
The world needs that, Laura. There's a lot of people that struggle. Mental health is important. Physical health,
spirit. So important. Yeah.
And I think good on you. I think that's a terrific thing to do. And
thank you.
You continued good luck, and really on behalf of. All your tribal brothers and sisters around the world, I'd like to take the time to thank you for taking this time, Laura. And
thank you.
And I'm sorry to all of you out in tribal if I didn't get too much into your questions. But, Laura said that you've had a fascinating life, Laura, that's for sure.
Thank you. Yeah, I've got a few good stories up my sleeve.
Oh, yeah. Look, I was saying to Caleb also has a fascinating him up in... up in Churchill and living with the polar bears. It's
Caleb has got a very interesting story. Yeah.
Very interesting. And so I was saying he should write and you should write. And it's nice to know that you are doing some writing with your, so we might get together on some, a book about naturopathy or whatever it is, that.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely. I'd love to.
No, but and in closing, is there anything on our 20th anniversary you'd like to maybe say to the fan base, Laura, because it's 20 years since all this?
I know. I can't believe it's 20 years. Well, first of all, I'd just like to say thank you so much for having me on your podcast to interview Ray. I really appreciate that. And thank you for everyone who took the time to send in questions and, sorry if we didn't get to all of them. And also, take the time to listen to this interview. But also just thank you so much for your ongoing support for the last 20 years. The amount of messages I've received over the years that have been so incredibly touching, speaking of how our show has, touched the hearts of so many and really helped and supported a lot of people go through some tough times. I think that the show addressed a lot of really important storyline, not just for issues that, many teens experience, but also for us adults as well in this journey of life. So, yeah, I feel so blessed and honored to be part of such a special show. And thank you so much for all of the support.
Well, that's lovely, Laura. Thank you very much for that. And, yeah. And take good care of yourself. And
you too. Yeah, thank you. And my love to all the family.
No, likewise. And our love back to you, Laura. And lots of love to you. You take care. And we'll catch up again soon.
Yes, that'd be great.
Yeah, all the best and goodbye to everybody in Tribe World. You look after yourselves as well. Lots of love. Bye-bye now.
Take care. Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye now, Laura. Bye-bye.